What is strategy all about? How do great organizations develop and work with strategy? These are questions we'll be exploring now. Welcome to the Value Strategy Pod, where we decompose the strategy of some of the most interesting organizations in the Nordics. I'm Tala Scherfsvik, and I hope you will join me in the quest for knowledge about how to think and do strategy.
I would like to welcome Torbjørn Larsen, the CIO at Telenor. It's such a pleasure to have you here, Torbjørn. One could ask, you know, why should an IT director be in a strategy podcast? But I think maybe you have one of the most important roles in developing strategy going forward. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Torbjørn, you are one of the wisest people I've met. I was thinking, you know, related to IT, digital and strategy, but actually it's in general. You're a very, very wise person. So it's so much fun to talk to you. You have initiated, supported, and brought about major transformations of very large organizations, among others, NAV, which is the Norwegian Labour and Welfare Administration organization. We'll talk more about that. You have a background from the military, research and educational institution, public sector, technology, construction, large American consulting firms, and you've also been self-employed. So you've done so many things. But one of the things I really admire about you, Torbjørn, is your courage to kind of face different situations and your willingness to be both liked and also disliked in big and huge transformations of major organizations. But Torbjørn, can you tell us a little bit about who are you actually?
So thank you so much for inviting me, Tala. So it's a pleasure to be here. I guess my resume kind of speaks a bit for itself. I guess I'm curious. I'm a bit impatient. I guess back in the days I grew up in the software industry. So I started as a developer and kind of learned the trade in some really strong software development, software engineering environments, and that has kind of, I guess, been a good foundation as software is eating the world, so to speak. So it's taken me, I guess, quite far, you know, outside also the software industry as such, as digitalization and software has become, you know, more core and key to any company out there. So on the private side, I have grown up kids and live with my wife Marit out at Nesodden. It's a peninsula just across the fjord from where I'm sitting right now. But in general, I guess it's hard to escape from the fact that I'm more than average, kind of preoccupied with what I do, so my profession and you know, anything IT and digital is plays an important role in my identity, I guess.
This is the same as being an academic. It's like you never leave your work. It's always kind of circling inside your head and thinking, well, how you can think about it differently.
Unfortunately, so.
You've been through some major kind of transformations, Torbjørn. I just want to move right to NAV right away, if that's okay. Can you tell us a little bit about NAV and what you did at NAV and kind of the way of thinking about a technology as a facilitator and mechanism for huge strategic changes of an organization?
So let me zoom out slightly first. So I do think that, you know, not only at NAV, but, you know, across all industries, you know, we have seen IT evolving, you know, from the first email across the ARPANET or, you know, back in the 60s. We've been through some stages. And right now, I do think that, you know, it's hard to find any industry or any kind of large scale or complex business out there that has that can avoid, you know, a very strategic relationship to IT, to digitalization, and increasingly also to working with data and insight. So that has become basically a matter of life and death for these organizations. So IT has really become strategic. And then we've also learned over the years that, you know, the good way to work with IT, with software and with digitalization is not by having these giant leaps, you know, driven by big programs or projects, you know, every 5 or 10 years. So that is kind of also, a lesson learned in software communities and an advantage for me having grown up in those, that, you know, when you work with solutions in a complex environment where it's hard to really plan ahead, you basically need to evolve continuously. And that is also at the heart, I think, now. So there's something about the lessons learned in software development that, you know, good software is being built in cross-functional teams so that you get, you know, many perspectives on the problem and the solution. And it's being built in small pieces that you deliver continuously. It's not being driven by, you know, a plan that was written, you know, a comprehensive plan written a long time ago. It's a continuous learning and development process. I think that is now evolving to also become a good way to approach business development and organizational development in increasingly complex business environments or you know, conditions in society. So if you want to really evolve your organization, your value creation, and also then your solutions, your processes, it's not anymore a big, you know, project-driven effort. It's really a continuous learning and development process. And that's where we started at NAV. NAV is a very unique construct in Norway. There's no country on earth, I would claim, who has consolidated so much public sector under one roof. So there's 1/3 of the Norwegian state budget being channeled, you know, through that organization and those processes. So you do find, you know, larger public sector entities out there in the world. Norway is a small country, but you don't find any country who has consolidated so many different aspects of public service under one roof. And that is, of course, complexity, but it's also a massive opportunity to optimize 1/3 of the state budget in one place, you know, create more value for the Norwegian citizens. And you can optimize that in one place, and increasingly also driven by data. So it's a massive opportunity, and I do say that NAV Norway has an opportunity to do something that the world hasn't seen before. I think, you know, really reinvent, you know, some of the most important public sector services that any society need. And to do that, we try to really create a learning organization. You need to accelerate your ability to learn and adapt. And that is about molding the organization, but also create a much more changeable architecture. So let me stop there and we can maybe...
No, it's just super interesting because it's a kind of, you know, understanding something about the level of digitalization of Norwegian society. We might discuss that a little bit. But as I had a PhD student working with NAV and the data in NAV, and he developed his PhD in terms of exclusion of digital users which are not very familiar with the digital solutions. That paper, that the first paper he wrote was actually kind of referred to in the Wall Street Journal the Washington Post. So this is like on an international level for a public sector organization. I just want you to elaborate a little bit kind of on that dimension of the things you've been doing.
So let me explain. So this is one public sector entity employing approximately 20, I think they're up to 22,000 employees now. It's actually grown slightly, you know, even though they digitize quite a lot. So that is, you know, a puzzling factor in my head. But regardless, 20,000+ employees serving the Norwegian population with a wide spectrum of services. So you have, on the one hand, you have a lot of kind of family benefits, sick leave and healthcare kind of benefits. And of course, you also have pension funds and pension management. And then you have the entire area of unemployment. So you have both unemployment benefits, but also the services, you know, working with unemployed in the labor market. So it's a really wide spectrum of services in one place. And in total, it constitutes 1/3 of the Norwegian state budget, more or less. So it's big, it's complex. And as any, I'd say, state-driven entity, you know, it has its roots in I would say, you know, a kind of Max Weber type of bureaucracy. You know, this is the identity of public sector entities, is that, you know, you're not here to drive crazy innovation. You're here to be robust, you know, trustworthy and stable, and you know, you need to be able to document, you know, whatever steps you have taken, and it's very rule-based and rules-driven, policy-driven. So So this is a type of organization that doesn't respond well to accelerating complexity and shifts in the environment. But at the same time, as any organization, you know, it's really hard to survive over time unless you actually are perceived as valuable, you know, around. That is really something to reflect on, even. So no organization can survive over time unless you are perceived as valuable, you know, by the target groups, whether it's, you know, groups in public sector, in society or customers in a marketplace. You have to kind of be add some value to them. So how do you evolve your value creation, basically? And we try then to adopt, you know, ways of working as is happening, you know, across other, you know, industries and also in private sector. How do you accelerate your ability to learn and adapt and to evolve, you know, not necessarily what you offer, because at the end of the day, this is also politics, of course, you know, what benefits should we have and what level, should they be at? But how could we at least tap into the massive potential in, you know, becoming more efficient in how we actually manage and process and deliver these benefits? And then when you work with unemployed, that is also really targeting, you know, different groups. You know, you have groups of young, uneducated, you know, and you have groups who have been away from work life for quite a while for different reasons. And then, of course, you also have, you know, growing skills gaps. You know, we have almost like a very weird situation in European work life now, where we both have increasing unemployment and at the same time you see increasing demand for new labor. Because that basically reflects a skills gap, you know. So we are confronted with a massive challenge to actually reskill, you know, in large groups and entire nations even. So how can NAV, you know, evolve its practices in those areas, you know, by adopting new ways of working, but also adopting, you know, new technology platforms and generally, you know, accelerate its changeability.
I just also think that you also, some of your strategic thinking is really interesting. So I think you're thinking about what this organization is about and what's the kind of, you could think as a public organization, we're just deliver out the services, you know, we have money to be distributed. But I think you're thinking, Torbjørn, about what is this organization? What's it going to be? What's it there for? I think I would love you to reflect on some of that as well.
And I do think that this actually goes across both public and private sector, and it's more about, you know, large organizations with a long history and deep roots. You know, generally over time we have a tendency to become quite introvert. So our reason to be, you know, our rationale is really about our past. You know, we are here for this reason, and over time we have become, you know, pretty good at it as well. You know, so this is, I think, a danger to any, you know, large organization with a history, is that at some point, you know, you are so preoccupied with just, you know, optimizing whatever you have been doing for a while, that you forget about, you know, those that you're serving, basically, and whether those are, you know, users in society, consumers of public services, or they are customers in a marketplace, you know. So we have this inside-out perspective of the world. And when we then make plans and strategies, you know, we basically build on our past and we build on our, you know, internal core beliefs. And we never really take that step outside of our organization and start viewing ourselves from the outside in. You know, are we really creating value for our target groups? You know, are we actually making a valuable difference, you know, in the lives of our users and customers? And that, I think, is a big shift, you know, in any, you know, organization these days, you know, as the societies and business context is becoming more complex, you know, change happens faster, user needs change faster. We cannot make, you know, big plans, big strategies. So that is becoming a much more an oscillation kind of thing where you think and you act and you think and you act. But you also need to drive, you know, those processes from an outside-in perspective. Basically, you need to be more concerned about, you know, who are we there for, what needs do they have, and you know, what role can I take in solving for those needs? You know, how do we create, deliver, and capture value? You create value by understanding needs. You know, I create value for you by solving a need that you have, but I'm not actually creating value for you by just understanding what need you have. I need to deliver, you know, some value. So I create value by understanding needs. I deliver value by having products and services that actually cater to those needs. And then I also need to understand how can I capture value, you know, from that solution. Yeah,
I know that you've been talking about, for example, for Nav, you said that we are like income securers, like we are securing income for the users, for example, rather than saying we're just giving these benefits to you. It's more about how to make sure that you feel secure in your income. And then you've also talked about, you know, maybe we should start doing like private trainers for people, because in terms of, you know, allowing people not to be on sick leave and not have illnesses, maybe we should like be much more on the, you know, preemptive side and rather help people train before they get ill. So you've had some kind of thoughts about what the actual needs of these customers or users were, which I think was super interesting. Just comment briefly on that, because I want to move on to telecom for a little bit as well. Yep.
Yes, so I guess generally, you know, public sector is really not used to actually have that outside-in perspective, you know, because we are policy-driven, so we tend to not think so much about, you know, in that perspective. Working with unemployment and working with individuals is, of course, part of NAV's mandate today as well. I guess the discussion I was at least eager to engage in and try to trigger is that, you know, even so there is certainly a difference between public and private sector, you know. So public sector entities and public services is not so much about profit maximization at all, but it is about value creation, though. We should be concerned about, are we creating value and can we deliver more value, you know, to our constituents in a more efficient way and also increase the effectiveness of our services. And then we need to take, you know, that perspective on it. And that triggered multiple discussions. So when we talk about, you know, benefits, for instance, you know, the value for me as a citizen doesn't lie in the case work or the case process as such. You know, there's no value for me in the inner life of NAV in processing, you know, my rights. The value actually appears the second I get, you know, the benefit I'm entitled to and can move on with my life. So having that perspective, these organizations have a lot of manual processes, and digitalization can help make those processes slightly more efficient. But actually, you could also use digitalization to fully automate benefit processing. So that is also, and that is easier to talk about if you take the user perspective, that, you know, the value doesn't lie in caseworking. This challenges, of course, these organizations, because, you know, there might be thousands of people, you know, who are doing, you know, a tough job, you know, processing all these cases. And then, you know, the perspective you have on that challenge, should we make the caseworker slightly more efficient, or should we actually automate income security? And you can take the same perspective also working with unemployment. Sorry, we got stuck there for a second. So it's really, you know, we are individuals, and how can you basically optimize that effort? You know, how can you, you know, leverage data? Of course, also research. How can you optimize our ability to mobilize, you know, unemployed, and it takes, you know, different effort and different, you know, perspective depending on where you are in the country, you know, what opportunities are in the area, you know, what is the situation of the individual, what is the motivation, you know, so and of course all this is already a concern, but I do think that we could become much more efficient and effective in also in performing those tasks, you know, if we dared to take a user perspective. But it of course challenges the thinking around equality, for instance, and so it's a balancing act. Of course, it needs to be fair. We are very concerned also about, you know, equal rights, but at the same time, you know, one size does not fit all when you work with unemployment. So again, I guess my perspective was I was willing to challenge that a bit more. We should be more concerned about making a valuable difference, you know, with the people we're working for, than, you know, just sticking to policies that might not be as efficient anymore.
That's super interesting. And, you know, in Norway, we have a big kind of orientation towards welfare. How can we create more welfare? You've moved in different industries, Torbjørn, and now you're at Telenor and you're working with telecom. What's happening in telecom that you think is really interesting right now or over the years that's been, you know, going on?
So telecom is, of course, it's such a big industry. It's an old industry, and it's basically a chocolate box when it comes to, you know, strategic discussions, because it's an industry that, you know, everyone can relate to. All countries, you know, do have a telecom industry. Most often, you know, it started, you know, with a state-owned entity. And over the years, it has got maybe some competition. And these companies are big. They have been, you know, resourceful for many years. They play a vital role in society, some more than others, maybe. And what I find interesting or intriguing is really that, you know, if we leave the first 100 to 150 years out of it, you know, the past 20 years, the world, work life, you know, business have become increasingly networked. We move our, you know, software assets to the cloud. After internet, you know, we interconnect and communicate and collaborate, you know, more and more. So we are increasingly becoming dependent on connectivity, fixed or wireless. And the demand for bandwidth and speed is almost unlimited. And that is evolving, I would say, almost with an exponential pace over the past 10 to 20 years. In the same time period, let's say over the last 10 years, and if you look at most of the big telcos, they have more or less lost half their valuation in the same time period. You know, even through COVID, where everyone needed, you know, connectivity and bandwidth, it didn't really affect this industry in a good way. So what lies behind that challenge, basically, you know, that you're offering a product and a service that everyone needs and it's in a big demand, and still, you know, the same market is viewing your prospects, you know, not that good. And it's really, and it's a complex discussion, so we won't be able to go into details there, but it's about a lot of shifts happening at the same time. So one thing is that, you know, we not only need connectivity, we need, you know, the services on top, so to speak. You know, it's partly a question about, you know, how can you as an industry innovate and evolve your value proposition to be relevant enough, at least. You know, I think no business can, you know, become everything for everyone. I'm a strong believer in a kind of core competency agendas and three theories around that, you know, that it's hard to really become good and competitive at anything unless you really have some unique resources and some core competency. So we need, but still, you know, we need to innovate and evolve our offerings, you know, beyond connectivity to be relevant enough, at least. So we do have an innovation challenge. And then at the same time, we're also challenged quite deeply by some technology shifts. And we've been through them before, but this time I think it's an even tougher challenge. So one thing was going from fixed to wireless connectivity, so to speak. I recall back in my Cisco days that, you know, we view the markets, especially during financial crisis, you know, we had to look for new markets. Africa, which is, you know, a fairly new country in terms of industrialization, they were kind of two-thirds wireless, whereas Europe, you know, being the museum of the world, you know, we are like two-thirds fixed. And that really changed the ball game in terms of what technologies and products did you have to offer, you know, what markets were there for you and what were not. So that is a shift that telco has been through. The shift that we're in the midst now is from hardware to software. So networks and telco infrastructure, communication infrastructure, are increasingly becoming softer on standardized hardware, off-the-shelf hardware. That means that, you know, it's not about just digging the trenches and you know, putting the fiber in the ground, building the towers, and that is a sourcing play for a telco. You know, you have vendors that you source from, you source entrepreneurial services, and you build out this infrastructure, and then you start charging. And it's big investments. It's an industry that invests heavily year after year. But normally, back in the days, you had then 5 to 10 years to also earn back that investment. But now, you know, with 5G and going into 6G, you know, this is a software play. Yes, you get your infrastructure out there, but then also you can start upgrading software. So you buy that Tesla and it can upgrade its software. You know, you park it and it upgrades its software, and tomorrow it can park itself. And it's to some extent the same with our infrastructure. So horizons have become much shorter. You know, we need to evolve faster, you know, develop new value propositions, not in years, but in months. So that technology shift both challenges our core competency, but it also challenges our pace, basically, of innovation.
I would love to talk about pace too, Ren. It's actually something I'm working on a strategy book, and I think that pace is really a key issue to think about what should go really fast and what should not go as fast when you're thinking about strategy. And also this value proposition, like how that changes over time and develop. I find that super interesting. Just because I know you've been working internationally and in Norway, what can we learn from kind of the Nordic, Norwegian culture companies? What can others learn from that? We've talked about NAV, we talked about, you know, the telecom industry, you're currently at Telenor, you've been working at Cisco and in international in the Soprast area, I know also abroad. So do you have thoughts about that?
Well, that's almost like a new podcast, I guess. But there are also differences between, you know, Scandinavian countries. Just to state that up front, Scandinavia, Norway in particular, is small generally. So when we talk about software digitalization, working with data, and these, you know, these are global markets, and so then of course, you know, working with data and insight is more context sensitive. But still, you know, most Scandinavian countries will run into kind of scaling problems. You know, we think too small in some cases, but so that is at least, you know, that is something we maybe can learn, you know, from the outside world, that, you know, it's sometimes I guess we tend to complicate things and that kind of hinders us in actually, you know, being efficient at scale. The other way around, I do think that, you know, the digital shift that we're in right now is really about, you know, creating new organizations and new ways of working. It's really challenging some traditional hierarchies and kind of leadership and cultures out there. You want to basically increase, you know, our ability to learn and adapt and create more value faster, you know, with less effort. And that is really about aligning, you know, your organization with value creation. You basically want to mobilize people across previously very separated areas or silos even. That is my experience, is that, you know, that is almost like good news for you know, the employees out there, because, you know, they can now come together in teams closer to the customer. They're more enabled. Where you find challenges is in the leadership lines. I think that, you know, you're moving power around, and this challenge is kind of a lot of leadership identity and culture. Generally, I would say that Scandinavian organizations, I might be speculating a bit, but I normally say that, especially in Norway, we have a healthy disrespect for authorities. So I guess autonomy comes easy for us, and it can of course also be a challenge if, you know, are too autonomous. It's not a home alone party we want to invite to, but I do think that we might have a slight cultural edge in terms of building, you know, agile at scale organizations. And it's about leadership identity. It's about culture for collaboration and so on and so forth.
And finally, we do have a pretty high level of trust in society. Do you think that matters in some of these endeavors and things?
Definitely. You know, again, building, you know, an agile organization and building, you know, autonomous teams that, you know, can go after innovation and value creation, you know, on their own, so to speak. The flip side of that is really, you know, trust-based leadership. So you basically, you know, these organizations to scale and be successful, we really need to, you know, have a talent for you know, trusting people basically. And you see less of the controlling leadership and much more of the enabling leadership. So inside organizations, I think, you know, trust is a key factor. And it's also a challenge then for some cultures and some, I guess, archetypes of leaders. On the society level, I do think that, you know, we're challenged big times. I mean, it's both technology driven, and of course technology is also behind some of the big crises that we see these days, you know, whether it's a pandemic or you know, environmental crisis and so on. Trust is a scarce resource in society these days. So how do you kind of regain trust in society? There's of course not a silver bullet answer to that, but I do think that, you know, I guess Scandinavian countries do have something to build upon, but we can also really throw it away. So I do think we are a bit challenged these days. And to be honest, I think it's really, you know, public sector and even political systems are not exempt are also challenged, you know, with these shifts that we see. So we talk a lot about digital transformation in private sector and in kind of in enterprises in the private sector. We don't talk that much about the need to transform, you know, public sector and there may be even political processes. We, to some extent, we almost, it's like we need to reinvent, you know, the welfare state and maybe even the democracies. Because if we don't, we do see, you know, dark forces stepping up and tapping into, you know, the inequalities and so on. So I sometimes kind of miss a burning platform and more impatience and maybe also some more courage to actually get more creative on you know, what could, you know, public sector 2.0 look like, or the next generation democracies actually. So how will that play out? If the good forces don't kind of step up to the occasion, we know what will happen.
I think that's such a great place to kind of finish off our podcast, Torbjørn. I started out as talking about you as a courageous leader, and now you're kind of challenging others to take on some of that as well. So thank you so much, Torbjørn Larsen, CIO at Telenor. Thank you for coming to us.
Thank you for having me.